Welcome to Good Calls with Dean Blandino, a production of iHeartRadio. What's up? Welcome to Good Calls. I'm Dean Blandino, as always, joined by Travis Hanson.
Hey, Dean, how you doing today?
I'm good. How are you, Travis?
I'm good, thanks.
And on audio, Joe Madrid.
What's up, guys?
Not much. Going into week 8, NFL week 8. We got a great show. We're going to talk NFL. We're going to talk a little college football. And we got a special guest. Warren Sapp is going to join us. Please, please, please stick around for that interview. We talk about everything. We talk about the U. We talk about NFL rules. And we talk about Warren's advice when dealing with wild animals. Okay, so stick around for that.
It's a wild card. You never know what you're going to get.
Yeah, good one, Travis. All right, so let's, but what I want to do before we go into week 8, can we take a step back and just a little step back in time? And I made a prediction at the end of last week's show. Joe, can you play that for us, please?
As much as I hate to, I will.
Please, thank you.
I think we're going to get a pass interference reversal next week.
So that was me predicting that we were going to get a pass interference reversal. Now we had
good call.
Thank you. Thank you. We hadn't had a pass interference reversal since week 4. 48 total reviews going into week 8, only 7 reversed. So not very likely that prediction would come true. If you're handicapping that, Joe, what are you putting the odds at?
I'm probably putting that at about +3600.
Boom. I throw $100 down and I walk away with a clean $3,600 right there. So
hey, that's 4 Tesla payments, baby.
Okay, we're not talking about Teslas. All right, so because we did have a reversal, Denver, Indianapolis, big play, T.Y. Hilton, 3rd down, incomplete pass, gets his arm grabbed. Cody Sensabaugh, the DB for the Broncos, grabs his left arm. T.Y. can't get to the football. Colts challenge and they add the foul. They create the foul in replay. And I think we all
round of applause.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. It was not for me because I made the prediction that they actually created a foul in replay. Look, this is pass interference. This is a call that should have been made on the field and they did a nice job adding it. But again, we've seen some going into this in the last couple of weeks that were also pass interference that were not overturned. And I think the one thing probably, if we're looking for a common denominator, I think in some of these calls that have been overturned and we had to go back to early in the season, it's if the receiver's arm is compromised in some way where it's only one arm getting up to be able to get to the football, I think they're more likely to put the flag down in replay. And I think that's what we saw in Indianapolis on Sunday. And so we saw a reversal. So now we're up to 8 for the season so far. And let's see where we end up at the end of the year. Just a quick summary on penalties going into week 8, where we were up 18.03 per game. That's accepted, declined, offset. So that's all fouls that are called. 18.03 compared to 15.76 at this time last year. So up pretty good clip, you know, a little bit over two a game. And when you look at the penalties that are up significantly, offensive holding, roughing the passer, offensive pass interference, illegal hands to the face, and defensive holding are all up this year. One interesting fact, we did a little digging, and this year, one interesting stat that if you commit fewer penalties than your opponent, what percentage of the time do you think you're winning the game, Travis? You commit fewer penalties, and I tweeted this out, by the way, and when I tweeted it, I said commit less penalties, and I had the grammar police tweet at me that, oh, it's fewer, and just accept the stats. Stop being grammatically a jerk off. But anyway, fewer penalties.
I think it's got to be like 60-40.
60-40. Joe, what do you think?
I'd go 70-30.
Okay, so when you commit fewer penalties, just this season, but it's not that far off from where your historical numbers are. If you commit fewer penalties than your opponent, you're winning the game 49.5%. So actually less than 50, right at 50% when you commit fewer penalties. Now let's take another stat. When you commit fewer turnovers than your opponent, where do you think that is percentage-wise, winning percentage?
I would say 80-20.
I'm going to go 65-35.
So 77.1%. Yeah. So next time you complain about your team having more fouls, more penalties than your opponent, it's not that big a deal when you look at it statistically. It's actually turnovers that are going to be the key when you talk about wins and losses.
Don't commit those penalties at end of games and crucial situations.
But sometimes those penalties overturn a turnover. So,
well, there's no question. Look, penalties impact games, no question. I'm just saying that there's always this talk, and usually on social media, there were 13 calls against our team and only 8 against the other team, or 6-3 or whatever. Statistically speaking, that's not a big driver in terms of your team winning or losing. Obviously, the more disciplined teams over time are going to be more successful, but
our goal here is to get people to stop tweeting the refs are killing us.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much, Travis. And stop turning the ball over. You throw 5 picks, you deserve to lose. Another, we've been tracking this, and Travis is really, he's super into this. So I'll let Travis talk a little bit about this, the onside kicks. And he's taken kind of, this is his baby this year, and he's very, very concerned about the success rates of onside kicks. So we had 2 so far in week 8, and neither was successful. So that gets us to what for the year, Travis, in terms of percentages, success rates?
Well, it's 3.8%. So we got 1 out of 26. That's not good.
So not good. And when we talk about last year, so 2018, significant changes to the kickoff made it a little bit harder, that much harder to make that onside kick, to get that onside kick where you didn't have a run up. You had to be on at least 1 yard or on the 34, basically with both feet down, and you couldn't lift a foot before that ball was kicked. And so it dropped from historical percentage of 13% to 8% last year. Now we're at 3.8. And so something to continue to watch for as we move forward with onside kicks. And we've talked about this before. Onside kicks are really important. They promote, you know, comebacks. Without the onside kick, without the ability to get the ball back, you know, especially when you're out of timeouts, then we don't have these close games, and teams are basically done if they're down, you know, 2 or more scores late in the game.
As much as I see these onside kicks going down like this, I just wonder, in your opinion, Dean, what do you think the league has to see? Like, what percentage-wise do you see a change? Like, we've talked about, we don't want to see the gimmicky, you know, 4th and 12 play, but they may go to that because you're seeing these other leagues do something like that. What do you think?
Well, I think if there's only one successful onside kick for the whole season, I think that's a problem.
That's a problem.
That's a major problem. Now, again, you don't, one season is, it's not a my favorite word, a huge sample size, but it would be enough to say if we're at, let's say 1 for 40, you know, and we're talking about, you know, 1%, you know, something like that, that would be something the league would have to look at. We'll see what happens. We're at the midway point, and hopefully we get a couple of onside kicks, successful onside kicks, and we bring that percentage up, because, you know, I'd hate to see something gimmicky, you know, and the kickoff is a big part of the game. And you know, and I think the onside kick, obviously player safety is your primary focus, but I'd love to see some more successful kicks going forward.
Well, it used to be such an exciting play, the kickoff and the punt return. And now you rarely get kickoff returns, and punt returns just are penalties on every play. And now taking away the onsides, it's like the kicking game's almost becoming obsolete.
Yeah, you sound like somebody, you sound like one of these fans that, oh, there's a penalty on every kick return and da 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 da. You don't sound like somebody that spends a lot of time with one of the premier experts in officiating in the, I don't know, the world.
Well, Mike Ferrer's on the road a lot.
Set you guys up for that one.
God, I'm so glad you beat me on that.
Both, at the bit there. Like, Joe, I wish you guys could have seen Joe. Joe was like, oh my God.
Salivating over
joke,
here.
Joke opportunity. Joke. All right. We're talking
Joe's
a lot
not
of,
on a word count today,
no,
I guess.
No. A lot of talk about kickers. Kickers are football players, too. So what did we see in the 49er game? 49ers, what, 7-0?
Yeah.
7-0. Look at that.
Garoppolo, man.
Mitch Wishnowsky.
There you go.
The 49ers kicker got called for use of the helmet making a tackle on a kickoff return. Anybody named Mitch Wishnowsky should not be getting personal fouls in professional football games. But, you know, this was the new rule that was adopted last year or 2 years ago, actually, lowering the head and initiating contact with the crown or any part of the helmet, really, to any part of the body. This was a tough call. It didn't look like Mitch or Wishnowsky, as his friends call him, really looked like he took the brunt of the hit, that the returner actually was the one that dipped his head. But again, typically when those types of calls, the officials are going to focus more on the player, the defensive player, than the offensive player. That's just the way it's been. But Mitch was called for use of helmet, and but then, you know, I don't like to revel in people's misfortune, but it was just interesting that, you know, the Bears. Our buddy Eddie Pinheiro, who we talked about after the Broncos game, mm-hmm. who was like, how excited was he when he made that kick to
you
win?
You actually called that too.
You did.
Right?
You did.
You didn't, he didn't go Grammatica style where he blew out his knee, but he was really excited.
He was super excited. And look, I get it. It was so early in the season, though. It was the Bears' first win. He wins the game with a kick against the Broncos, and it was like he had the key to the city, right? Yeah. They were interviewing him, and I said at the time, I was like, listen, that's a tough, tough job, an NFL kicker. And you're only as good as your last kick. And I said, this, you're going to have an opportunity to win a game again or tie a game late in the game. And you better make that kick. And because you can become, you know, you could become persona non grata pretty quick. And I think we saw that today in at home in Soldier Field, missing that kick against the Chargers.
He said after the game, he was trying to play the wind. He didn't strike it well and he didn't make it. So.
Yeah, and look, it's a hard job, and kickers are like officials, really. They're like officials. They only get noticed when they make a mistake,
right?
And you don't really, you know. But even that, I would say, officials don't get carried off the field when they make a good when they throw a flag that's correct.
I think the lesson here is don't get too high, don't get too low.
That's kind of how Travis is in life. Travis trying to keeps us very, you know, on. Like, I'll get a little excited in the studio and I'll start talking about something that has nothing to do with football, and Travis will bring me back to square one and say,
what do you mean? All the people from Fox that are listening, we're talking football all the time.
Exactly, exactly. But, you know, life of a kicker, you know, a guy that is the greatest kicker. I don't care what anybody says. This is the greatest kicker of all time, and he's been getting a lot of flack lately because he missed some extra points. And he's on the back end of his career, no question. But Adam Vinatieri today, again, showed us why he's the best kicker of all time. Nailed a 51-yarder to win the game against the Broncos. The Broncos have been on the wrong end of these game-winning kicks this year. But
An extra point earlier in the game,
He missed
too.
An extra point, but when it counts, he made it. That guy has made so many pressure kicks, whether it's in the snow against the Raiders in 2001. He's won Super Bowls, multiple Super Bowls with kicks at the end of the game, and the guy's a stud. And we will, you know, talking about our interview a little later, Warren Sapp does mention the need for a kicker at the University of Miami and how they're in a downturn with kickers. So
QB killer talking kickers.
I still have 4 years of eligibility.
Oh boy.
Speaking of that, Joe thinks he can make a 33-yarder with no kicking experience. So we will bring him out onto a high school field, the local high school field, and we're going to give him 3 shots to make one 33-yarder.
I don't think he's going to make one.
Neither one of us think he's going to make one. We'll record it, we'll post it, but we're going to do that in the next couple of weeks. And we'll share that. But Joe,
I think for fun, Dean, you and I should kick as well.
Yeah, I'll kick. Yeah, absolutely.
Let's do it. Oh, I can't wait for this day.
I'll kick for that. Let's go to our head scratcher call of the week. We're still waiting for Murray's to reach out to us so they can be the sponsor for the head scratcher call.
Just DM us.
Just, you know, they're on. Does Murray's on? Do they have a Twitter account?
Let's take
Murray's.
A look.
Check that out.
We just need to follow them.
But, yeah, let's follow them. But let's get to the head scratcher, Tampa Bay, Tennessee. This is a big, big call in this game. It's late in the game, 4th and 2, and Tennessee lines up for a field goal attempt, and they fake it. So the holder, who's actually the punter, Brett Kern, he takes the snap, and he and he tries to run for a first down, gets crushed by Devin White. Ball comes out, it's picked up by the Bucs, and they return it for what could be a touchdown. But unfortunately, the down judge covering the play ruled Kern down by contact. Now, look, it's a tough play because you've got the line of game involved. It's a fake field goal, so you have to transition quickly. As an official, you know where your focus is on a field goal, especially the down judge who's on the line of scrimmage. That down judge has to be looking down the line, making sure that the offense is lined up properly, looking in at the football, making sure the defense doesn't jump offside. And now it completely shifts. We get a snap. Now you have a run toward the down judge. The line of gain is right there. He has to rule on it. He makes the ruling. Unfortunately, replay showed it was a fumble. Nothing replay can do there, and it ends up taking away what would have been a touchdown against the Bucs, and they lose the game by 4 points. And we've been down this road before this year. We had a game the Rams and the Saints where it was a pass fumble situation, and the official, the referee, blew it dead and ruled incomplete pass, took away a touchdown from the Saints. And again, nothing you can do in replay, and it's one of those deals where, again, you teach the officials. You've got to be 100% sure if you're going to put that player down. And look, the official, it's a tough, tough deal because you don't want officials being indecisive based on a replay. You don't want an official to not make a decision because replay, they're thinking replay can bail them out. So that official made a decision. He thought he saw the runner down. It happens quickly. And obviously he wasn't down. So again, I think we saw after that Rams-Saints play, we saw a lot of plays get let go, officials mm-hmm. really not being somewhat hesitant, and I think we may see that again. I think we may see plays being let go, and again, if you're not sure, you should always let it go, but you want officials to make decisions, and you don't want them to rely on replay and for that to be a crutch.
Yeah, the league did a pool report on that. Didn't add much to it, just saying that's what was called on the field and it's not reviewable.
Yeah, and for those of you that haven't, you know, don't know what a pool report is, that's an opportunity. Look, they don't let the officials speak to the media after a game. No sport does that. But there is an opportunity for a pool reporter who can go to the official's locker room, ask the referee some specific questions about a situation, and then relay that information to the rest of the media. And so, again, they don't put the officials up on a podium or a press conference or anything like that, but there is a mechanism in place. Not a lot in that pool report. Referee Adrian Hill just talked about what the ruling was, what happened, and what could have happened in replay. But, again, tough. It's a tough play, tough way to have a, you know, really what should have been a touchdown taken away. Let's go take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little college football. Number 5, Oklahoma goes down. College football playoff chances.
Maybe gone?
Fading away. And we'll come back with Brandon Blandino inside the Cube in our Warren Sapp interview next on Good Calls. All right, we're back on Good Calls with Dean Blandino. That's me. Let's talk a little college football. Play of the weekend, really. Number 5, Oklahoma. This is a team that from the Big 12's perspective, this is their best chance to get into the college football playoff. And they go into K-State, not a game that you would think was even going to be close. I mean, K-State really in a
K-State 4-2 playing pretty good.
Pretty good ball. I mean, they've got a great. I mean, that's a good head coach that they got there after having Bill Schneider there forever. But when you talk about Chris Klieman, goes down to the wire. K-State had a big lead in the fourth quarter. Oklahoma climbs their way back. They have an onside kick opportunity, and it's the ruling on the field is that Oklahoma recovered it legally. It goes to review and gets overturned. And I'm looking at it again for the 600th time.
I'm watching it again.
All right, I'm watching it again. And here's the deal: the ball hits the Oklahoma player before it goes 10 yards, so that's a foul for illegal touching. But what everybody wanted to talk about, and this made its way around social media. Somebody gets in the rule book and they find this rule, which it is a rule, and this is in Rule 6, which deals with kicks, and we're talking about free kicks here, kickoffs. It's forced touch disregarded. And so the rule states a player blocked by an opponent into a free kick is not, while in bounds, deemed to have touched the kick. So the question was, did the K-State player block the Oklahoma player into the football? Therefore, if he was forced and blocked in, then that he would be deemed not to have touched it. And I've looked at this thing a million times. This is a collision that happens at full speed. The Oklahoma player is moving toward the football. The K-State player is moving toward the football. They both lower their shoulders. There's a second Oklahoma player that contacts the K-State player. It's a collision. It's impossible to say that the K-State player forced the Oklahoma player into the football. Replay can look at the aspect of the touching. They can't look at forced touching. They made the right call. Unfortunately for Oklahoma fans, that was the right call. And when you're talking about forced touching, what you're really talking about is a player that is passive. And what I mean by that is a player that is not engaging an opponent, is not trying to block, is just trying to stand there. And you typically see this on punts where the returner will just stand there and then the kicking team will try to push that player into the football. Well, if you push that player into the football, then he's deemed not to have touched it. And look, it's a tough call. But again, it was the right call, and the player did touch it before it went 10. And, you know, the ball was given back to K-State, and K-State ended up running out the clock and winning the game. And it's, again, tough way to lose the game, but you give up 48 points, you're going to lose a lot of football games. I'm sorry. So
even with that Oklahoma player that comes in second, he makes that big contact pushing everybody in. If he pushes the K-State guy into the ball, the same rules apply there?
Well, again, you can't push. The idea is either team, you can't force an opponent into the kick, but it would have to be something where that player is just passive. And none of those players, you watch that play, nobody's passive on this play. They're all moving toward the football. They're all engaging with each other. It's a collision that happens at full speed, and it's impossible to say that any of those players force the other player into the football. But again, the Oklahoma player touched it, and you can't touch it. The kicking team's not eligible to touch it until either the receiving team touches it first or it goes 10 yards. Then that ball becomes, they can touch it legally. And ball went over to K-State, and I thought it was the right call.
So in that process, though, how long did it take during – like actual time, how long did that review take?
It took a while. And I think we saw some reviews, and I think you see this in college where the NFL process takes longer because the referee is involved and you have to get the headset on and all of that. So per review, the NFL process does take longer. College doesn't take as long, but what you're seeing in some of these major conferences, these Power Five conferences, is the referee now they're bringing a little device over for the referee to look at the play. So that's going to extend the review. And then the other part of it is that there's no time limit in college.
Should there be a time limit? Are these things taking too long?
You know, and you think on average last year, Division I FBS, right about 120, 121 per review, which is not a bad number. But we've seen some reviews in college where it's been 5, 6, 7, even 8 minute stoppages. That's insane. And so I do think that the NCAA needs to think about a time limit. And maybe it's not, maybe it's from the time the game is stopped. Maybe it's an overall, maybe it's 2 minutes would be max. Right, because that's typically in line with what a TV break would be.
Yeah, 90 seconds usually.
So we're not delaying the game unnecessarily, but I do think college needs to think about that. We did get a great suggestion from Scott, who works with us. If you want a really good Twitter follow, go to Scott Tammel, TAMMEL. He's on Twitter. Follow him. He works with us in the studio, and he came up with a great idea. He said, listen, if we want to keep these reviews short, what we do is we take the replay official and we put the replay official in a tank. And as soon as the replay official, the review is initiated, that tank starts to fill with water. And so basically,
we put a camera on this. It's perfect.
You've got to make a decision before you drown. In essence, that's what that wow. that was Scott's suggestion. He even added that, like, there were points where we could let, like, you know, some kind of, maybe an alligator into the tank, or a shark, eel. An electric eel, which I think is an urban myth, by the way. I've never seen anybody shocked by an electric eel.
Something you and I both agree on. Thank you.
But this was Scott's idea, and I certainly think that would speed up the process. It might make the process more exciting. I think
review fear factor.
People would be watching. There'd be a whole new group of fans watching college football that have no interest in football, but they want to see, like, this. They want to see if this replay official is going to die before
is he gonna get it in
before
time?
They can make a decision.
Joe Rogan can host it.
Exactly. So it's a combination of college football and fear factor. And but that was Scott's idea. Speaking of that,
I don't think it's going to happen, unfortunately.
No, I don't think it's going to happen either. Let's
good call, Scott.
Speaking of Inside the Cube, you know, we work together in the Fox Sports and the Rules Cube, and we work, you know, we do college football on Saturdays, sometimes Friday, and we do NFL on Sunday. And Saturday night we work late, and I was really excited because we have all right and I want you guys to back me up on this. We have completely boycotted Taco Bell.
Yeah.
Right? Have you been to Taco Bell since they gave...
I don't even know what Taco Bell is.
Thank you. So since they got rid of the double-decker taco, no one is going to Taco Bell. So we were there late. We had a Pac-12 after dark game. So we're there. We're going to be there till 11. And so we typically get like a cheap meal. And so we went with Wendy's. So good. So
their
good.
Nuggets are
the
really
spicy
good.
Nuggets. Are
I didn't go spicy.
Really,
but the regular, really
they're
good
really
too.
Good.
Yeah,
I had the spicy nuggets, the Dave's Double, legit. But that's not my point. My point is, I wanted to just finish the night strong. So after the Wendy's, I went and I stopped at 7-Eleven and I got a pint of Ben and Jerry's Half Baked. Okay, which is the greatest ice cream of all time.
I got to try it.
Okay, so if
you talk about it a lot.
If you don't know what half-baked is, and Joe knows what half-baked is, okay, Joe, half-baked is a combination of chocolate chip cookie dough and chocolate fudge brownie all it together. And I don't know how it started, like how they invented it, but it, to me, in my mind, like, I've fantasized that this is how it's happened. Like, Ben and Jerry are hanging out. And they're sitting in Vermont, they're hanging out, and they live next to each other, and they're like watching a movie, and Ben is eating chocolate chip cookie dough, and Jerry is eating chocolate fudge brownie, and they're hanging out, and then all of a sudden, they like look at each other as they're about to take a bite, and there's like light bulbs go off. And it's like remember, like peanut butter and chocolate running into each other? That's how I envision half-baked. Maybe they were imbibing in a little, you know,
medicinal.
A little medicinal. And it was like, oh, I'm half baked. And that's how they came up with the name. And that's how Half Baked came out. But anyway, I get a pint of Half Baked. I'm so excited. Okay. And Joe knows that I have a system with Half Baked. And there's a system where you don't eat it directly out of the freezer.
This is a system I cannot get behind because I pull it out and I immediately have to eat it.
You cannot, I'm with you on that.
No, you cannot.
He lets it sit there.
You cannot eat it right out of the freezer because you get freezer burn and it's not as creamy. So you let it sit. Okay, set a timer. I don't care. Go do something else. Go. I don't care what you do. You let it sit at room temperature.
Legit, for how long?
About 7 minutes, 7 to 10 minutes, depending on the temperature in the room. So
you have to think ahead of when you want to eat your ice cream.
Travis,
I don't like that.
100%. So you take it out, you let it sit, because then it's like, and you'll know when you take the cover off. If you take the cover off and it's just like very smooth, oh my God, the feeling. It's like this smooth. Wow. It's so amazing. And you just see the top.
You guys can see the look on
just,
his face right
it
now.
It has just a slight little melt to it. And you go that first ridiculous. Okay. So I have Wendy's. This is what I'm looking forward to. So I go to 7-Eleven. I put it in the freezer. I'm doing whatever. I take it out. I go to let it sit for 7 minutes. I go to take it out, and I didn't realize the plastic was off. So, you know, there's a safety seal. Safety seal was off. So now I've got to make a business decision because I've seen on the social media idiots running around, taking the thing off, licking it, putting it back. That 7-Eleven that I get it from was pretty shady, so I don't know. So now I got to make a business decision. Do I eat the half-baked knowing that some degenerate may have licked my half-baked, or—
Just get rid of the top layer.
What?
Go in. Yeah, that's it.
What do you think I did?
I think you ate it.
I ate that shit. Are you kidding me?
If it's 7 minutes, you're now
Are you kidding
in
me?
Your zone.
And then I felt great today, so there was nothing wrong unless it's like a 2-day thing. But
glad
so
everything's okay.
So that was my half-baked story.
People out there probably think that you have said, oh, this guy's on TV, he's got this glamorous life, and here you are.
It's definitely 7-Eleven.
7-Eleven fast food.
Schlepping at 7-Eleven.
Wendy's at 7-Eleven.
And I'm eating it despite the safety seal not being
half-baked
there.
Half-baked is legit, though.
I gotta try it. So legit. Let's go Brain of Blandino. What do you got for us, Joe?
Brain of Blandino. All right.
Thank you for that. So this is a rules. This is a rules, Brain of Blandino.
All right.
That's, convertible.
It's a vehicle rules show. Convertible
rules. What are the rules to driving a convertible?
Okay. So I think if you're a man, you can't drive a convertible if you're under 50.
I agree with that.
Okay. Period. Like, you can't own a convertible if you're under 50.
I agree.
All right. I think a woman can, and I'm not, look, this is just.
I think you should be able to drive a car, however, whatever you want.
Your Honda Civic.
Okay. Here we go.
Keep going.
You got to be over 50.
Sorry. Keep going.
Here we go.
It's got to be a two-door, I think, too.
So two-door. I just think it's an age thing where you get to a certain age where you can now you look the part in the convertible. And I just think it's like, okay, I think it's like guys under 50, once you hit 50, right, your phone, you take it off vibrate, it goes on sound, okay? You can get the convertible, all these things, okay? That's a standard. So I think convertible, I think one, and even then, two dudes in a convertible.
Yeah. Me and you cruising down the road.
I think that's against
just
the rules.
Not going to happen.
I really do.
What about a Jeep Wrangler? That's pretty much a convertible.
No, that's got big tires.
A Jeep Wrangler is not a convertible.
I mean, you're still having the top off.
No, I think
two guys is a no.
Two dudes, no.
Guy and a girl, absolutely.
I remember just growing up, there was always like cute girl in like the rabbit cabriolet.
Yes.
That was such a, oh man.
White interior,
her name
red
was like
pants.
Ashley, and she was so cute. But I agree. Two dudes, no. Over 50, single dude, fine. One guy in the car. Under 50, stay away from the convertible. You know, you could buy a Tesla like Joe does and never shuts up about it. But
when are they going to have a Tesla convertible?
That's the rule. That's not even inside the Brain of Blandino, though. I think you made that
one up.
Yeah,
that was one that I added.
You made that
I've got
up.
A few in there.
You made that one up.
But
so.
you know what? You ran with it well. Nice work.
All right, I appreciate that. So that was not something I came up with. Let's go DM of the week. This was actually a DM that I got from Steve Hoden. And so what Steve Hoden is complaining about, he DMs me, how does Tom Brady get to reset the play clock? And we've heard this before, that Tom Brady, and so there's the signal for play clock. It's you take your hand, one hand, and you like pump it up in the air. Like you're not—
Raise the roof.
But you're raising the roof with one hand. You're not totally raising the roof. Like it's the party's
like
getting,
you have your drink in your hand
party,
and you're raising
yes,
the roof one hand.
Exactly. There the party's go. Starting to get a little crazy, but you don't want it to get too crazy. So it's a one hand raise the roof. And so there's a play in the game on Sunday against the Browns. It's fourth and four. And the Patriots decide to go for it. And play clock gets inside of 20 seconds, and Brady turns to the referee and raises the roof with one hand, and the referee does reset the play clock to 25. The question is, why does Tom Brady get to decide? No, Tom Brady doesn't get to decide. It is a great question. Tom Brady doesn't get to decide, but the quarterback, and it's not just Tom Brady. It's any quarterback. You'll see kickers do that. Holders do that. And the bottom line is the mechanic, it's a fourth and four situation. So they're inside the 30-yard line, which is typically going to be a field goal. So you have a kicking ball that comes into the game. The Patriots then decide to go for it. Now we got to get the kicking ball out of the game and bring a regular ball in. If all of that happens and now the regular ball is down and the play clock is inside of 20 seconds, then the mechanic is to reset the play clock to 25 seconds. So that's what happened. Brady knows that. He's going to ask the referee, but the referee is going to reset that because mechanically the football was not made ready for play before 20 seconds on the play clock. And that's how that
happens.
That's
a good one.
So it's a good DM of the week. I can't do a lot of my DMs because a lot of them are really bad. And
can you make sure to get me a kicking ball?
There's mean people.
For the competition?
Yeah. You'll get it. We'll get an official K ball for the competition. Let's go to another break. And when we come back, I'm so excited. Hall of Famer Warren Sapp joins
us.
On Good Call. All right, really excited about our guest this week. This guy was a national champion, Super Bowl champion, All-American, All-Pro, Hall of Famer, Warren Sapp. Warren, what's up, man?
Ha, good to speak with you, Dan. What's good, baby?
Nothing. I want to talk officiating and rules and get your take on some things when you played and what's happening today. But before that, I want to talk a little bit about the U. And what's going on? Now, listen, I went to Hofstra. They don't have football anymore, but back in the day, we had Marcus Colston, Wayne Krabet, Willie Colon, so what's up? But I was always a U fan. I was always a Miami fan going back to the 80s. What's going on? Just recently, Manny Diaz just took he said, 3-4, it's on me. Where do you see the program right now? What needs to happen to get back to the glory years?
I think the one thing we're missing is a dominant defensive tackle because we always talked about University of Miami being quarterback university with, Jim Kelly and Geno Walsh, Erickson, and that whole list of characters that played quarterback there. But there was always Jim Burke, Reuben Carter, Russell Cortez, myself, Jerome. I mean, we had a dominant front that could go after somebody's quarterback. And it being quarterback, we had a quarterback that, could go out and win the football game for us. And right now, we don't have either one of those, and then we don't have a kicker. My God, Jesus.
That's crazy.
That is ludicrous right now for me.
Because Miami's always been...
The programs in the world, we don't have a kicker, man. Are you kidding me?
Miami's always had a good kicker, good kick punter, place kicker, and it feels like they can't make a kick this year.
Oh, my God, not one, not even the chip shots. I mean, it's unbelievable. And we can't stop a nosebleed, and Diaz was supposed to be a defensive guy. So it's hurting right now. It's really hurting.
Do you see, you talked about quarterback you, and like Perry's going to start this week, and it's his third straight start. You had Jaren Williams. Tate Martell hasn't taken a snap at quarterback. Do they have the guy currently on the roster, or do they got to go recruit the guy?
I don't know. We look like transfer you because the only guy on offense we got is number two, and he transferred there. Thank God.
Yeah.
I mean, this is unbelievable.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's crazy. Now, is there like a group chat where you guys, on game day, you and Ray Lewis and Gino?
No, you couldn't do one of those.
And Luther Campbell. Can I get on that?
It's an after game counseling session we have. No doubt about that. That definitely goes on.
I could only imagine.
Talk us off the ledge and to hide all sharp objects.
So let's talk a little bit about your transition, from college to the NFL, to the pro game. What was the toughest thing for you going from the college game to the pro game? If there was one, what was the biggest jump for you?
Holding.
Really?
Offensive-minded game in the National Football League. I remember one game I looked at the umpire, it used to be behind us.
Sure.
So I look back and say, hey, man, you want to watch this holding? Oh, I got you. So I go up and shake the offensive lineman. I look at him, I say, that's not holding. He said, grow up. I was a rookie. I said, okay.
This is how it's going to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is a grown man's league. I mean, you have to fit for yourself. Don't look for any help out there on the football field. So that was my first lesson. I got told, grow up. I said, okay. I'm a grown man. I pay my mama bills. What you mean, grow up?
That's funny. And
that's what I said to my mind. I wasn't bad enough to say anything to the ref. Then I thought they'd throw you right out of the game.
Oh, well, we're gonna get into you. You definitely grew into your. We're gonna get into a little bit of your You know, as a veteran talking to the refs. We'll get there, but let's.
I was a rookie then. I was learning.
You were good. You were a good soldier at that point. But we're gonna get into a little bit later. But you came into the league around the time, you know, mid-90s, where they were expanding a lot of the rough and the passer rules and defenseless player protection. Did you ever feel like, you know, you talked about holding, but did you ever feel like those protections to the quarterback made it harder for you to play defense?
No.
Okay.
No. It just gave me a strike zone. That's all it was. I mean, couldn't hit him in the head, and you couldn't hit him below the knees. But, I mean, trust me, that never stopped the assault on the quarterback. He was always your target, and like the great Al Davis said, in the first 10 plays, the opposing quarterback must go down, and he must go down hard.
That's right. So what do you say?
The game should be played to the end of time.
What do you say to these guys today that say, well, I can't play defense? You know, I can't, you know.
I tell you what. You know, because you watch Bosa at the end of that game when he sacks the quarterback on the sliding field. I mean, he's not landing. He's landing on him, but, I mean, why is that okay? And the guy in Miami blows his knee out in week one, week two. Was it week one last year? Yeah, I think it was week one. Blew his knee out. Sack trying to not land on the quarterback. I mean, I found that to be crazy. Because the last time I checked, he's got an offensive lineman that's in front of him that's paid to protect him.
Yeah, exactly.
So once I get to him and I sack him, where I land, it should be on the quarterback. He's the cushion.
Well, you were allowed to do that back when you played, and I think
I'd have to go to my owner and ask him, you know, do you want the quarterback assaulted or do you want him, you know, laid down softly?
Well,
I'm not giving up my money.
Exactly.
I got kids to feed. I'm not giving up my money, so. You make a decision, boss. You paying for the fine and me landing on the quarterback because I use him as a pillow.
Well, it's funny because that used to be language in the rule book that used to say you had to cradle the quarterback on the way to the ground. Cradle, the actual word. Now I can't see you in a defensive line in your position meeting and the defensive line coach saying, hey, we got to cradle this guy.
Got to cradle. Yeah, I know the cradle. I'm going to wrap him up and take him all the way to the ground. Because, listen, they used to fight out of everything back in the day. I mean, you had to take the quarterback down. He wasn't going down. He wasn't sliding and none of that. Oh, none of that. You had to take him down. So it was a game. It was a different game. So we're playing it a lot more wide open right now. I know that.
Well, that's exactly right. And what do you think of, you know, there have been rules changes, and you talked about offense in the beginning, and yes, this is an offensive league, and the rules changes are, you know, kind of focused in that area. Do you think that's good for the game overall, or do you think we need to have more balance?
No, it's good. It's good because it's a skill game now. It used to be a brutal, you know, ISO league, fullback, Mike linebacker, you know, all those things. Now it's a wide-open game. Who can run? Who can cover? Who can stop a two-way go? And who can rush the passer? Because they're throwing it 50 times. Holy smokes.
Yeah, yeah. No question.
As long as that quarterback, as long as you still bring that pretty girl out and you drive her around, I get to dig her up, yeah, let's play. Let's play.
What do you think about, you know, there's been so much discussion about replay and pass interference, and I know you're watching games. You know, as a former player, what are we doing? What are we doing with replay? Should we be reviewing this stuff?
I tell you what, we've gone too far. Because when we brought it back, the Vinny Testaverde play with Seattle would have saved Erickson his job. That was a big one. That would have saved the coaches and 12 coaches around the National Football League when they had to move. That's why we brought it back, to make sure we ensure to get the plays right there. You know, but the other day, you saw that. You can see the cleat plant of the guy out of bounds. And they still called it a touchdown in the Green Bay game.
Yeah.
You can see the cleat clearly right there on the white. Clearly on the white. They even showed the cameraman standing over. You can see it. That was ridiculous. Some of them are ridiculous. And then they want to put the pass interference is tough enough to call as is. Now we're going to go to replay? Come on. stop it.
That's the exact point. It is such a tough call, and you know
how. Now you're bringing in a whole nother. Well, he might have grabbed him a little early there, and come on, man, come on, let him hand fight, let him play with their players, then just call what you. But I tell you what, we really need to do: put two more referees on the field that are at the sticks, because that's what the game is on third down. We have men standing at the line of scrimmage, and when the ball snapped, they don't move, and then now they got to run up the field to mark that ball.
Yeah.
We're playing a game of inches and we're giving away yards.
Yeah, well.
We're playing a game of inches and we're giving away yards. Only thing we need is two more referees standing at the sticks, because that's where the action is. The action is at the first down marker.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's a good point. And we, you know, when I was at the league, we talked about adding an eighth official, and it was always, okay, where are you going to put that guy? You took the
Right at the sticks, because that's where the action is.
Well, there you go. All right. We'll go to the competition committee. We'll call it the SAP rule.
The action is at the sticks. We play the sticks on third down.
No question.
The quarterback is throwing for the sticks on for third down, because he wants a what? First down. And the first down is where? At the sticks.
And I think we get, and the way. And I'm glad you said that, because I think sometimes, especially on the rules side, we overcomplicate things. This is not a doesn't have to be a complicated game, right?
Y'all just try to cover everything, and you can't cover everything, but you can cover most of it from that referee being right there at the sticks, because that's where the action is going to be.
I like it. I like it. All right. Yeah. Let's go to, okay, you were a rookie. You didn't want to talk to the officials, all right?
No, the referee told me to grow up.
He told you to grow up, and you said, okay.
I didn't have much of a conversation with him about anything.
All right, so now you win a Super Bowl with the Bucks in 2002. You go to the Raiders, and now in 2007, you get not one, not two, but three unsportsmanlike conduct calls for mouthing off, and you get disqualified from the game. I was at the league office in the officiating department. You were the officiating, you know, most wanted at that point. And what happened? What happened during that sequence?
Okay. No, it was it happened earlier in the year. Number 53, I think he lives in Manhattan Beach, because my friend lives in Manhattan Beach, and I was at the 900 Club, and they was like, yeah, he lives up here. I was like, yeah, let him come by the bar. So he's in the Houston Texan game, and he was standing in the huddle with the offensive line, and he came out, they were about to get ready to, go in the huddle and one of those timeouts, and he was giggling. So I looked at him and said, so what's so funny? So he looks at me and says, oh, they are afraid of you. So you know me. When you tell me a bold-faced lie in my face, I looked at him and I called him a MF lie, MF liar. And he looks at me and said, what? I said, yeah, you're a MF lie. What you going to do about it? And he looks at me like I had just slapped his mother or something. And I looked at him like, you just going to tell me a bold-faced lie? You could have said none of your business, and that would have been better than telling me they're afraid of me, because I know that ain't the case. So we get to playing the game, and something else happened. I MF'd him real good again. So he's the umpire in the Jacksonville game. He wanted to throw the flag on me back then, but White, the official that he had, number 99, told him, say, grow up, man. I said, come on, we're playing the game.
Yeah.
Because I cussed him out. I'm like, yo, in my hood, when you tell a lie, you get cussed out. You don't tell a grown man a lie in his face and look at him. I'm supposed to trust you, not behind me, to call the game fair? And you can't even tell me what y'all were laughing about? Come on, man. We grown men, dog. Don't play like that. So this was, like some personal thing with me and him on this Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
The one in Jacksonville just turned out to be just a bad day of officiating. And you can go all the way back to this. When they throw the flag, they call it offsides on Burgess. Burgess goes yelling at the ref. He changes it to Chris Clemens. Chris Clemens looks at me and was like, it was me, sir. I was like, oh, you was offside. He's like, yeah. I'm like, were you trying to look around me? He's like, yeah. I'm like, I told you to go off of me. So now I know it was Chris offside, but they didn't correct it on the loudspeaker. So the next play we line up, Nnamdi Asamoah is called for offside. The very next play. I'm like, are you kidding me? So I walk out there to the head linesman. I say, yo, dude, you couldn't give my DB a warning, tell him back up a little bit. You're standing 2 feet from him. So he looked at me like he's never done this before in his life. You know, like, back up a little bit there, 21. Watch your lineman, you know?
Sure, sure. Which happens all the time. Which happens all the time.
Come on. You don't call offsides on a cover corner that's coming man to man. You just tell him back, hey, watch your lineman. Then nobody would have looked to the line of scrimmage and lined himself up. So they don't do that. Throw the flag. Jerome was his first time being a referee. This was his first year.
Mm-hmm.
So he wants to decline a penalty, and they would have been close enough to kick a field goal to make it 31-0. I'm like, wait. I'm like, who declined the penalty? He's like, what? I'm like, who declined the penalty? He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, I'm the captain of the team. Burgess is the other captain, and Numbie's way out there playing man-to-man. Burgess don't talk. Who declined the penalty? And then I got Lane Kiffin on the sideline yelling like a little five-year-old kid. Yeah. I'm like, what? Who declined the penalty? I said, relax. Nobody. He did. He was like, what? I'm like, the ref did. Come on. I'm taking the penalty. Got to move him back. They're going to throw a screen or a draw and then kick the field goal.
Sure.
I'm not going to give him a chance to get the first down and drive it up my ass and make it 35-0. Come on. I'm smarter than that. You know, so now I'm being questioned by Lane Kiffin that I done declined the penalty, and now they about to score. I'm like, are you kidding me? And I'm at the point where I would just want to just shoot myself right now.
Sure.
Because we lined up to start the game with 12 men on the field, and they still gained 9 yards on a run play. So trust me, this has been building since the first quarter.
Sounds like this game is really, it's going very well.
It, it means nothing to nobody on any scale, on any level, and it's 2 days past my birthday and 4 days of Christmas. And I'm a half an hour away from my house in Orlando.
Yeah, so you're ready to go. You're ready to go. You're ready. You're ready to get into some eggnog. You're ready to go. I got it.
How much it's going to take for me to get out of here.
I got it.
It was Christmas time, and I was ready to go home, man. I had enough.
Well, you did. You got out early. That's now I know. Now
I went about it the wrong way. I just went overboard. I really did, really bad.
And that happens. It's emotional. But now I know. Now I know why. Because it was Christmas time. You were close to home.
You want to hear the best part? My brothers and sisters were all in the stands, you know, 90 minutes from home, and they're gonna tell me he saw Mama walk out the stand. That's why he did that. That's what they tell me. I saw my mother walk out of the stand. That's why I did that. Just go home too.
Yeah, because you could see that. Because out on the field, you could see exactly somebody leaving.
No, I was so over my head. I'm like, are you really kidding me? Now I got to go all the way to the sideline, walk you over to the lane to explain this, and then I got to walk back out here and play. I said, dude, you're really wasting my time right now. And it's 28-0, and then 53 said something to me, and I was so sick of him. We were back in the Houston game, back in Oakland. Yeah. So that's why I went off. I wanted him to do something. Just say something to me and spit on me. I'm gonna slap you in the mouth.
Well, we're glad that didn't happen. We don't need that.
That afternoon, I apologize for all that was involved on that Sunday afternoon. Juan was not himself. Sorry.
Nah, that's fine. And you know what? And it's funny because that's the thing. You know, when you're doing the officiating schedule, you don't want to put the same officials with the same teams too much during the season because it builds up and that kind of stuff. You know, you have something happen
it always happens, especially the way we used to play. We were on top of each other.
Yeah.
There was another obstacle in the middle of the field that we used.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. That umpire in that position, that's why they moved them. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah, but they see far less holding now.
Oh, I know. The defensive line gets away with a lot more of that grabbing and preventing.
Yeah, I know.
You know.
But then I'll be holding on the other side.
Yeah, yeah.
100%. Yeah, I counted that.
All right, well, last question. Here's the question. All right, what hurt worse, okay? Losing to Alabama in the 92 Sugar Bowl and not getting that second national championship or being bitten by a shark? Which hurt worse?
The 92 Sugar Bowl. I was 23-0. I was going for back-to-back.
That's all
we talked was perfection at the University of Miami. And it hurt so bad because I saw it coming during the week. We weren't as a team. We weren't together and a bunch of people.
Really?
A lot of individual agendas on their plate. Yeah, we had 4 senior receivers. We had 3 senior linebackers, 2 cornerbacks that felt like they were getting squeezed out. the best safety in the whole America and Darrell Williams. So trust me, yeah, we had a bunch of issues. There was a bunch of stuff going on that nobody knew about.
So the Shark came in second. Tell me the Shark story.
You know what? I was just being a butthole and just got taught a good lesson that Shark's
going to win.
Razor Sharp.
Shark's going to win.
And if you don't let him go or her go, they'll bite you. I was lobstering, and you know when you dig your hand in a hole?
Yeah.
I mess around to touch the shark, and I'm like, oh. And then we had the hookah holes, which is the, you know, like snorkel. He was blowing air, so I got plenty of air to stay there. So he turned, well, she turned sideways, and I could see the fin and the nose and the tail. And I could still see all the antennas of the lobsters I wanted. I'm like, how do I do this? So I looked, I'm like, I could just snatch her out of the hole, and she should just swim off. So I snatched her out of the hole, and she went to swim off, and something said grab her by the tail. I don't know what foolish thing in my mind said this, but when I grabbed her by the tail, she was at full extension, just moving. I wish I had my GoPro on the top of my helmet. That's what got me. I'm like, oh, I don't have my GoPro.
You didn't have it on tape, yeah.
Then I'd look up to see if anybody's watching, and JC, my little buddy, is right up above me going, because he doesn't have the air in his mouth. He just got to take a breath. So when I look back from laughing with him, the shark is bending his torso and everything back at me to bite me, and I luckily had a shirt on, and it caught the top of his mouth, and I got my skin out before he totally got me, because if he would totally got me, it would have ripped my wrist off the bottom, and we had a serious issue there.
That's crazy. That's crazy.
Yeah, I learned my lesson. Leave the animals alone in the water unless I'm in the boat with a hook on them.
There you go. That's a good lesson. Leave the animals alone. I like it.
Yeah, in the water, especially the
shark. All right, man. Hey, I appreciate it. Good luck with everything that you're doing, and come back and join us sometime.
Anytime, brother, and you keep doing what you're doing, and make sure we get that guy at the pile at the sticks.
We got it.
At the first time marker. That's all we need. One guy right there, then they ain't got to move, and they ain't got to run up there. We got a guy marking that already, and it's a lot more accuracy when he's marking it, when you're looking at it sideways, than running up from the other side.
All right, we'll make it happen. We're going to make it happen.
Thank you, baby.
All right, man. Take care.
Good Calls with Dean Blandino is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.